Good morning. This is Lisa Niver, founder of We Said Go Travel and author of Bravish, One Breakup, Six Continents, and Feeling Fearless After 50. And I am so honored and excited to be here with Jen. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. I loved hearing you speak at Women's Travel Fest. And I know everybody there in New York was just so excited to learn from you. And I mean, the accolades just never stop. I mean, you have the TED Talk, you have Amazon top best-selling books, and you have a brand new project. So it's hard to know where to start with you, but congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I work hard.
You do work very hard. And I loved watching your TED Talk, and we'll put it in the notes if people want to have the opportunity to learn from your brilliance about the transition. But we talk a lot. I've talked a lot, my book has 50 challenges before 50. And so a lot of people talk to me about ageism and how do we represent older women. But I think what you're talking about, being 29 turning 30, and the stereotypes of and the box of this is what women must do. So talk a little bit about your TED Talk and 29 turning 30 and what inspired you this life of being on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, it was very much a pressure because I've always been an overachiever. Obviously, it's just been a lifelong thing for me. And so turning 30, which is a big milestone birthday. I feel like the first milestone birthday where the birthday matters in not an eager way, but in an anxious way, right? Because at 10, you're not realizing it. At 20, you're just still wanting to get to 21 so you can drink. But 30 becomes the point where you're like, oh man, like it's getting real now. I'm an adult and there are things that are expected of me. Am I where I want to be in life? It's where you really start reckoning with yourself. And as a woman, particularly as a single woman who was very successful in her career, I had already started getting a lot of comments about why I wasn't married, why I didn't have children, if I was at all worried about my, clock stopping, being able to have healthy children, having geriatric pregnancies, if I was, what was wrong with me that I was still single? What is my fatal flaw that has made all men, decide to run the other way? And so it felt like even though I had achieved so much up until that point, that I had still failed in the most quintessential way of what is expected of a woman, which is to be a wife and a mother. And I hadn't reached that by 29. And I had had so much pressure on myself to try to reach that in the way where in my 20s, I worked so hard to mold myself to be what I thought men wanted, to try to, accommodate them and do so many things for them, that now as a 35-year-old woman, I'm like, that's none of that is happening. I will not, bake you your favorite meal while dressed in really amazing clothing. All of that is something that I did in my 20s to try to prove my worth. And I realized that despite doing all of that, I didn't get the results that were expected of me. And I felt like there was something inadequate about me as a result. And so my option was either to take that year and continue trying to mold myself, continue swiping on dating apps, continue trying to find somebody and be the perfect person that they might one day want to marry, or I could take that year and actually try to live for myself, actually send off my 20s in style, actually take that last year of my, quote unquote, wild and free youth days, right? Because your 20s are what you consider that. And I'm very aware of the passing of time. And so I was very aware that I was not going to get my 20s back and that I had spent my 20s living for others, achieving things, going straight through law school, straight to taking the bar, straight into practicing law. And I hadn't actually really taken the time to do anything for me. So I had a one of the Tinder date guys that we were supposed to spend New Year's Eve together in New York. I thought this might be a really fun thing. I've never celebrated New Year's in New York, which I'm actually so glad I didn't do, because I hear like people wear diapers to go there because you have to stay in the same spot for like over 12 hours. So they just like pee themselves because you can't leave to go actually pee elsewhere. So it actually sounded horrible. And I think I dodged the bullet there, as I did with all the other men that it didn't work out with. But I thought, you know, at the time I had glamorized like, oh, me and this guy that's not my boyfriend, he's made that very clear, but who I've been dating for 6 months, we're going to go and spend New Year's together. And he was in med school and he ended up ghosting me in like early December. And so now at this point, of course I had paid for the tickets. Of course I had paid for the hotel room. Of course I had done everything right, because this is the poor med school guy and I'm just so desperate to get him to go, and so that I can celebrate New Year's with a partner and have a midnight kiss and not be watching my parents kiss at midnight or everybody else kiss at midnight, or like trying to not have random guy kiss me at midnight, which is how all my other New Year's had gone. And so I was like, I want that quintessential New Year's. And I didn't get it. I got ghosted early December and I got stuck with these two tickets. And so I ended up trading that all in and using that money that I had spent instead to take myself to Athens, Greece, where I celebrated the New Year's by myself. I actually celebrated it on a plane. It was midnight when I was, you know, flying on my way into Athens. And I remember thinking like, wow, I really love celebrating New Year's on a plane because there isn't a countdown. No one's trying to kiss me. I don't feel inadequate. Nobody even knows what time it is because everybody's come from a different place. Like, this is the best New Year's I've ever had. And it hasn't even like, it's just been a minute into it. And so my birthday is January 3rd. So usually the beginning of the year coincides also with a new year for me. Just like, it's a big transition time. And so I spent that birthday really finding joy in my own company. I did all the things I wanted to do. I remember I specifically found a woman from like a Rick Steves supplement that I reached out to her. And I, at the time, splurged on a private tour with her of the Acropolis Museum. And she was so educated and she knew so much and all the guards knew her. So even when they were closing, they were like, you can stay 15 minutes extra, like to my guide. So it really felt like I was VIP with her. And at the end of that, she was like, you know, you're going to find your person when you find them. In the meantime, you have a home here with me in Greece anytime you want to visit. And I remember feeling so lifted by all of those interactions that when I came back, I thought to myself, how can I keep that feeling going for the rest of the year so I don't slip back into that fear, that insecurity, those feelings of inadequacy, and I stay empowered, I stay really happy naturally just for existing, which is what traveling was bringing me. And so I decided to take that 12 trips in 12 months challenge. I was working full-time as an attorney, so it was going to be a challenge to figure out how to afford it. It was going to be a challenge to figure out how to get time off. And all of those challenges kept me hyper-focused on my goal instead of anxious and panicking over turning 30.
Wow. I think it's so true what you're saying, that there's this little box that we put women in. And you're right. It's about feeling inadequate and feeling shamed. And we do this strange thing, like people get into college instead of being like, wow, we're so proud of you. Well, what's your major? Mm-hmm. And when I know when I got married, people were like, when are you having a baby? Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, you're turning 30, like what's wrong with you? So I have a funny story for you about your 20s and feeling like you just kept going and going. So in my 20s, I ended up at medical school mm-hmm. and I had to make a choice. And I was like, do I want to be in this building all day long? Do I want to be in training all of my 20s? I've been in school forever. And I ended up going on leave and leaving graduate school, and I ended up working at Club Med. And that's what started me on traveling. But again, thinking through, like, is this what I want? Is this the life I want? So you did this idea, 12 trips in 12 years, and you are an attorney. But I loved what you said in your TED Talk, that you actually had a side hustle. You were teaching English to afford these trips.
Yes, 12 months, not 12 years.
Oh, sorry, 12?
I don't think I've hit 12 years yet.
Sorry. 12 trips. Keep me honest. I like that. Keep me honest. 12 trips in 12 months and you're working on a book about it.
Yes, I am. A memoir about that year in particular. And so it was definitely challenging. I ended up taking 20 trips to 41 cities across 11 countries. And I used all my sick leave. Like, I called out sick from a hot air balloon in Albuquerque for the Albuquerque Hot Air Balloon Festival. I called out sick to go to Epcot, you know, VIP taping of the Chew. And I think we also, and I remember being like, I hope my boss isn't watching me on TV right now, eating this delicious chocolate croissant. And it was, but I really felt like the time is now. If I don't do it now, I'm not ever going to get the chance to do this again. I never got to take sick days. I used to work when I was at a private firm. I would work Thanksgiving Day, Christmas Day. I remember being at a party on Christmas Day and being like, or a pizza party they took us to after 1 o'clock. And I remember being like, it would be a better gift to just let me go home instead of being here at this obligatory Christmas party with all you people that I don't want to spend Christmas with. It was horrible. So I had already sacrificed so much that I didn't allow myself to feel guilty about using every single hour that had been allocated to me as time that I had off. And then how I was able to afford that was that I took on a second job teaching English online every morning before work. So it was, I mean, I would not have the energy to do this now at 35, not, you know, even just a few years later. I don't know how I did it then, the young energy of the 20s, but I would be teaching from like 2 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. I'd very quickly throw on a suit and then I'd head into work at 9 a.m. And I would do that to make an extra $1,500 to $2,000 a month, because when I had asked for a raise as an attorney, I think I'd gotten like a $5,000 raise and it came out to an extra $100 a paycheck or something negligible. Whereas making that side hustle money allowed me to actually have a real cushion where I could pay for those trips. And then I learned, how can I budget within that amount? How can I find affordable flights? You know, let's learn about travel hacking. Let's learn about budget airlines. I went to the library. Those still exist and they are my favorite places. And I rented out the entire section. Like, they let you take something like 22 books at a time. And so I would go with an entire pile of books and I would go home and read as to how I can learn to travel better. Scott Keys, who's the owner of Scott's Cheap Flights, he had a few books that were out. And, you know, that was basically like my Bible in terms of how can I save money on these trips and how can I get there for the money I have allocated. So I made it work. And I, at the end of that year, had used up all my leave, had used up, you know, everything. And I still had one other trip booked in February of the next year to Portugal that I had found for like 300 or less round trip. And I think I still had like one or two sick days left. And so I purposely, and it was like a Friday to Monday, because that was also part of my strategies. I'd take off a Friday, I'd take off a Monday, I'd go a long weekend, I'd time it around a holiday. I was very grateful to have coworkers that were happy to, you know, step in if anything happened while I was gone, but I just left things. I purposely didn't schedule things for days that I knew I was going to be away. And I remember that trip in February for Portugal, I actually did schedule a dentist appointment, an orthodontist appointment at the time, because I wanted to feel justified and like, I actually did go to the doctor today on this sick day that I have used. And I remember my boss like texted me when I called out sick. I was like, you know, you're only supposed to be out sick for actual sick days. And I was like, I am in the doctor's office right now, literally right now. like I am here. And so it was like in the morning in the doctor's office. And then in the afternoon, I was supposed to be leaving from Miami, which was a 2-hour drive from Naples where I was working. And that whole interaction with my boss and being called out, even on that day where I'm not on a balloon, like I am in the doctor's office, rattled me so much so that I made it all the way to Miami and I didn't realize that I had left my passport in the house. And so at that point, I was too late to go back the 2-hour drive to Naples and make it back to Miami. My flight was so cheap that they were not able to reschedule me on the next flight going out that weekend. So I lost everything that I had planned for that weekend in Portugal. I just ultimately didn't go. And I was so angry. And I didn't want to let that weekend go to waste. That weekend I went home and I was like, something's coming out of this weekend one way or the other. And in those 2 days, I wrote my first book. And then by March, I had self-published it. In April, it was already a bestseller in 8 categories. Later that year, it won a Reader's Favorite Award. And then by end of April, I quit my job.
Wow. You are definitely a one-woman force. and so I know some people that are listening, like I know you talk a lot in your TED Talk about the pressure of women as mothers and wives and living up to the standard. Like you were saying, you know, you're joking about, I'm not going to cook in my fancy clothes. But a lot of people feel pressure that they can't even take a sick day when they're sick. I mean, I think that's evolved somewhat with the COVID roller coaster. Certainly the time you're talking about, 2017, a couple years before that, it was different, and there still is pressure. So, you know, some people are listening like, oh, you know, I could never do that. I could never work in the morning. I could, you know, people have a lot of excuses. And mm-hmm. basically what you're saying is I committed. So what inspired this love of travel? Did you travel with your family when you were very young, or did you study abroad? What made travel so appealing? Like, what, obviously something like hooked into your psyche about getting out.
Yeah, well, I realize I have always been the same person. And even as I look back at, like, hindsight being 2020, I've realized certain things, like even taking the sick days for work. I used to cut school a lot in high school to do what I thought was like mental health days. And I would do like a sign. And the thing is, I had straight A's in high school. So my mother, I would tell her, I'd be like, Mom, I'm taking a mental health day today. I'm going to the store at the mall to try on pretty princess dresses and the pretty prom dresses. And then I think I'm going to go get some ice cream and then I'm going to go home. And I had the flexibility where, because I was such a good student, because I was already doing well on the SATs, because I was already getting straight A's, because I was already in all the AP classes and I wasn't suffering, I think my mom gave me leeway. Now, I didn't have leeway to go out at night after the sunset and the automatic lights came on the street. I had to be in because I was still the first daughter and my mom was very overprotective, but I did get leeway during the day on how to spend my day. So I realized that I've always been that same person. I've always still taken those days and felt that as long as I have my things together, as long as I'm still performing, why do you care what I do with my time? Like, if I have the same output, if I'm still getting A's, if I got a full scholarship to college, like, so that's the goal of doing well in high school. And so I've just always felt like I should be in charge of my own time and how I do it. And that's why I thrive now as an entrepreneur, because I do have that self-discipline. My mom was a teacher and later worked her way up to be a principal. So sometimes she would come and take a cut day with me and she'd be like, you know what? I'm going to join you. Let's go for lunch at the Colombian restaurant. And those are my most fond memories. I can maybe recall one or two things I actually did in school, but every single day that I cut school with my mom, every single day that I went and actually like enjoyed myself were the formative things in my mind where I was like, oh, like this is what it's all about. Like, it's not just about sitting in a desk and doing the routine and being a warm body in a chair. Like, it's about actually living. And so my mom always, again, very overprotective. I never got to go to summer camp. I never got to go to anybody's sleepovers. Like, I could have people come sleep over my house, but I could not sleep over anybody's house. Could not be out past a certain time at night. So she made it fun during the day. So like, instead of going to summer camp, we had, and it has to be said this way, so excuse me, mommy's greatest summer camp. It can't be said any other way. That's the way we say it. And so since she had the summers off, instead of me going to a sleepaway camp, we would do a different like educational activity. We would go and visit, you know, Longwood Gardens in Philadelphia. We would go to Amish country and learn about how the Amish people lived and try their delicious home churned ice cream, like so good. And I think that very early on sparked an interest in me in learning. And that's why I love traveling. I think that's why some people see me going places. Like, I just got back from Oklahoma and people are like, "You're in Oklahoma?" And I'm like, yeah, because there's something to be experienced. There's something to be seen. There are stories to be told. There are people to meet everywhere in the world. And I get just as excited about going to Oklahoma as I do about going to Thailand, right? To me, they're equivalent because I'm still going to have fun everywhere I go, meeting new people, learning new things, seeing that. And that's something that she really instilled in me from a young age. And then when I graduated high school with honors, cum laude, full scholarship to college, my mom bought me we went together and did a trip to Europe. She had never been to Europe before. My mom is Puerto Rican. She had been raised on the island. She hadn't really traveled much. And this was our first international trip. And so she did it at the time through AAA and Trafalgar, the tour group that they would have. And she paid so much money for that. At the time it was a lot of money, and she was in the middle of a divorce. So she really didn't have the money because her whole thing was like, take all the money, just give me full custody of the kids. Like, that's all I care about. And so I know that it was a stretch for her to pay for that trip. And so we went on that trip 2 weeks, Switzerland, Italy, France, the UK, kind of all the major hits around Europe, and like Rome, Venice, Paris, everything. And I realized pretty quickly, like, Italy was the first stop, and there was one meal where they were feeding us like peas and ham. And I remember being like, "Mom, why are we in Italy eating like frozen peas and ham provided by the tour group? There is like, I could throw a rock and hit 20 delicious pasta restaurants right outside of this." I, at the time, because I still love libraries, I used to go to the library every day after school for about 3 hours until my mom got off work and could come and pick me up. So a library is my safe space. And so I had gone to the library and I had rented the Europe for Dummies book. And I was like, I have this Europe for Dummies book, and it says that we can go here, here, and here. And I'm pretty confident that I can get us to these places just with the knowledge in this book. Like, let's ditch the tour. Like, let's keep them for the intercity transport, obviously, and the hotel nights that we've already paid for. But I'm done. I refuse to eat like frozen peas and ham in Italy. Like, this is bad, Mom. I know I can do better. And so we ditched the tour and we went around like Rome at night with me getting us around with the train station. And we took a day trip out to Stonehenge that she'd always wanted to see and that wasn't in our itinerary. And she's like, "Are you sure?" And I was like, "Yes, Mom, I'm pretty sure. It says you just get on the train and then you get off the train and then you're there. Like, it's not that hard." And I had taken public transportation, you know, for high school, so I was already very familiar. And I got us around Europe with the Europe for Dummies book, and we had a better time with the itineraries that I picked from the book than with whatever was pre-planned professionally by Trafalgar. And that was my first instinct where I can do this travel thing and I can do it well. When I was graduating law school, I had realized that I had done 7 years of schooling without any study abroad period because I was so busy running for student government, being on the Model UN team, like being super over-involved. And I actually purposely took a class in international law to be able to then apply to work with law reform commissions around the world for a summer. And I got accepted to work with the Australian Law Reform Commission in Sydney. So the year before I graduated law school, I spent a summer in Sydney, Australia by myself, where I think everybody else doing this program was like, "Oh, I'm going with someone else from the school who's also accepted." And I was like, "I'm cool. I'll go on my own. I'll figure it out." And that was my first time being literally across the world, whole different opposite time zone from everybody I knew, like not knowing anybody. And I think for the 3 week mark, I think is when you get really hit with homesickness, where you're like, "Oh, I miss all the foods I know. I miss talking to people." But once you make it over that hump, then you're like, "Actually, this is awesome. I never want to go home." So I loved Australia. I had a great time. I mean, I met a kangaroo, a koala while I was there, saw the Sydney Harbour Bridge, saw the Sydney Christmas lights that they have, or the Vivid lights, because it's not Christmas, Vivid. But it's during their Vivid. Winter, technically. I met a handsome guy there who was like one of the cutest guys I've ever dated. And, you know, I just had a whole time there in Australia that was amazing. So I knew I liked travel, and it wasn't something I had a lot of time for when I started practicing, but the year before my 12 trips and 12 months challenge, when I transitioned from the private law firm to the nonprofit law firm that at least had federal holidays, at least I didn't have to work on Christmas, at least I had, you know, 4th of July off, I actually did a mini challenge and I took like 6 trips that year to Machu Picchu, to Barcelona, to Rocky Mountain National Park. And I loved it so much that I think that was part of what sparked the then 12 trips and 12 months challenge. And now it's what I do for a living.
Yes, you do. So you have 5 best-selling books on Amazon where you're really helping people do some of what you did. You have the flight information and you have this whole series of incredible books. And obviously your memoirs coming next year, which will be even more inspiration. But one of the things I think that people don't realize is how much in the moment you have to be when you're traveling. You know, when you're out, like you said, and you're like, I must eat now and I have to figure out the train. And there's something for me like very invigorating. And I know one of the things in your TED Talk, you talked a lot about that the loneliness as an epidemic and loneliness as something dangerous. And people do get so worried, who will I go with? Who will I talk to? And so maybe if you just briefly speak about that. I know for myself, when I was traveling in Asia, like if you are by yourself, everybody wants to know, what are you doing? And if you stay in a hostel, I went to the Xi'an Warriors from a hostel and we all went on the bus. It said in the Lonely Planet, you know, whatever it said, get on bus 6 and get off after 4 stops and walk 6 blocks. And you're like, oh, that doesn't seem that hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be intimidating, especially for women who have this fear of going alone, of eating alone, of safety. I, having grown up in Philadelphia, having gone to law school in Baltimore, which is pretty crime heavy places, I felt like I could survive pretty much anywhere. I wasn't just some bobo. You know, I'd taken self-defense classes. I know avoidance is the best self-defense. Like you see something crazy, walk the street, give yourself distance to be able to react. Like I always walk aware like that anyways. And I love eating alone. It's my favorite thing to do. I do it all the time, even when I'm home, because it means I can eat anything I want and stuff my face completely. And I don't have to worry about being dainty. I don't have to worry about anybody watching me. You know, I can always get the appetizer, the drink, and the dessert. I don't have to pick one. I can do all of them. And then abroad, you actually have Wi-Fi in restaurants, pretty solid, that, you know, now it's much less of an issue, but at the time, sometimes cell service was spotty, you know, things like that. And so being at a restaurant was the one place where I can actually take my time and decompress. I can now look through my pictures, upload things, message my mom, make sure she knows I'm okay. Like I could take that time just for me. And I loved it. And I have always been asked, you know, like, oh, table for one. And then next thing you know, everybody wants to talk to me. I just came back from Easter Island where I sat down trying to mind my business, just have a like calm dinner. I really wanted to have a fancy fish, like something really nice. And by the time I left dinner that night, which we closed down the restaurant, my entire table was full. Everybody had sat down to come and talk to me. Like first started with the waiters, then other people from other tables. And I was like, this is what happens, because I feel like when you are in your element, I feel like I'm a light and I'm just like shining a light and I attract people and I attract things to me. I attract a lot of free things. I attract, I was just mentioning that I had entire opera dedicated to me in Florence because I got there early, which for Italian time is like super early, right? So so I was there before anyone else. And I was like, well, I'm going to talk to some of the people that are here at the ticket booth and like the performers. And I just was happy and excited and I had good energy and I had paid an extra $20 to sit in the front row. And so, which I don't think anybody did my age. Like there was nobody my age at an opera in Florence. Like it just wasn't the top billing for people, but I was really excited to be in this intimate setting, like a church turned performance venue where you could really hear the acoustic. I was really loving it. And so halfway through the opera, the man stopped to say, you know, we want to dedicate a song to a special lady in the front row. And I'm looking around like, who are they dedicating this to? And it's like, it's me. I'm the special lady. And so, and this man just sang to me in the most beautiful Italian song and in his deep voice. And it was just so wonderful. And it's those moments where I feel beyond elated. And I just can't believe that that's my life. And I get to live in that moment, in that body, in, you know, and it's just, it makes me feel alive. And I really feel like it can go either way. When I'm vibrating on a much lower frequency, when I'm angry, when I'm annoyed, I can chase people away without them even coming near me, right? Like they sense it. And the next thing you know, they do a beeline and all of a sudden everything around me is clear. But when that energy is on in the right way, it is endless, the amount of things that come to me all the time, all the free things, everybody that wants to show me stuff, everybody that wants to give me gifts. Like it's insane. And it really just comes from being happy. Like I know that that's crazy and it's not something that we as Americans really know about or ever live in that element, but just having that attitude of gratitude, curiosity, happiness to be there, just a general excited energy. It brings so much to me. Whereas I feel like for most of us, we live in a state of like constantly stressed out, constant scarcity, and that repels people and it repels experiences. And when I was coming back from one of the trips, I remember telling my brother exactly this. And I was like, I just feel so different when I'm traveling than I do when I'm in the office. Like I feel like a completely different version of myself. And I don't like who I am when I'm in the office. I don't like who I am when I'm in the courtroom, like almost like a warrior just trying to like decapitate the opponents, like being so vicious and so mean. And I love who I am when I'm traveling. And my brother's like, well, why don't you just figure out a way to have that same energy all along? And I think he maybe suggested like internal work or something like that. But I was like, you are right. I shall quit my job and I shall do this all along. I should just travel all the time. You are correct. He's like, that's not what I was saying. And I was like, no, you are correct. That is it. That is the solution. And I still feel that way, even though I do it for work, which makes it a little bit more serious than when I do it for leisure. It still feels like I never get somewhere and forget how lucky I am that people are there to share with me their life's work, to, you know, waiting to meet me, excited so that they can show me what they do in hopes that I can share it with others. It is such a privilege to do what I do. And that's why I don't care where it is that I'm doing it. You know, I met two Indigenous artists in Oklahoma last week, and they were waiting there for me the entire morning just to show me their paintings, their textiles. They were like, oh, we've researched you. We're following you on Instagram. We're so excited to meet you. And it's such an honor that people feel that way about me. And even if that meant that I was up at 4 a.m. to catch the 6 a.m. flight and I'm not feeling super great getting there, immediately I get energized when I have that, those interactions. And that's why I know I'm in the right career.
Wow. Well, you are definitely a masterclass in being open to opportunities and being grateful and really forging your own path, because you said, I'm not giving in to the societal pressure of this is what's meant to be or supposed to be. And I think you are living many people's dream life, as you know. And so I just, before we close, I've been asking all my guests, since my book is coming out and I did 50 challenges before I turned 50. And obviously you did your 12 trips, but it was really 20 because you're an overachiever before you turned 30. I've been asking people about, you know, the most worthwhile challenge. And I think you've shared so many already. So maybe there's something about if you give a challenge to other people, or what is next for you? You have this huge library of successful books. You've clearly traveled all around the planet. What is there a challenge that you are looking forward to, that there's something you haven't done yet?
I am still trying to be the very best version of myself. So right now I'm doing a lot of personal challenges. I'll be running my first half marathon next February. So I really want to get in the best shape of my life, because I feel like I've been very critical on myself, on how I look, and I've never worn a two-piece bathing suit, even when I was in my 20s and I could have, that I look at it now and I'm like, I can't believe you thought you didn't look good. Are you crazy? And because now it's much difficult in your 30s. So I'd like to be the healthiest version of me. I'd like to really feel strong. And, you know, so that's something that I'm working towards, getting to the gym regularly, training for that half marathon, being healthy outside and also being healthy inside. I've done a lot of work on, you know, different therapy, different coaching, like just really wanting to figure out what are my triggers? How can I better manage them? How can I be, you know, more kind and forgiving to myself, less judgmental, things like that, and doing the deeper work that I don't think you really even think about until you start to see, well, how can I improve myself? Because I think it's so easy to be like, it's everybody else that's wrong, instead of like, what is it about me that I still need to work on? And I still have a lot of things that I've identified. So it's felt very much like an internal and external journey to try to be the best version of me that I can. And I don't know that this is something I can put a timeline on or be like, by the end of the year, I'm going to have it nailed down pat. Because even still, I work on it. Like my money mindset was a big thing I had to work on when I switched from law, because I thought, you know, do I deserve to get paid to do what I do? Do I deserve to be paid more than I did as an attorney? Was being an attorney a more important job than what I do now? Should I just be so grateful to have, you know, just be hosted instead of asking for money for the work that I do? And so I've worked a lot on mindset. I've worked a lot on internal things, and it's constant work. And so I'm very interested in continuing to develop myself internally and externally so that I can be really proud of that final product. I still feel like I'm rough around the edges, and I'm trying to shine and mold it and make it into the best it can be. And I don't know that that'll happen before 40, before 50. It's probably ongoing. I find myself still sometimes falling back into scarcity, and I have to remind myself like, no, you are abundant. You can make things happen, like have confidence, you know? And so it's not a set timeline. It's not a set thing that I can say I'm going to write 30 blog posts in 30 days or anything like that, but it is my biggest challenge at the moment and something that I'm interested to committing a lot of time to.
Oh my goodness. Well, I just can't wait to keep following you on your journey. And I know everyone else is excited about your upcoming book, your current books. So where do people find you? Do you have a certain platform? What's your best website? How can people learn more?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me at jenonajetplane.com, like leaving on a jet plane. And same thing on all the socials, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, at Jen on a Jet Plane. And on Amazon, my books are under Jen Ruiz.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. You really, really are inspiring. And I can't wait to read your books.
Thank you, Lisa. Likewise.